evening. You're listening to WUWM at Night, and it's time for some comedy. We have our co-host with Milwaukee Comedy, Matt Kempel, in the studio. Welcome, Matt.
Hello, it's great to be back.
And we have our special guest for the evening. We have Johnny Beaner.
Hello, everyone. Girls just want to have fun.
All right.
Has there ever been a song with so much truth in it?
I don't think there has. It's deeper than people realize.
It really is, yeah.
Why is this song close to your heart, Johnny?
Because when asked to pick an 80s song, I couldn't think of any, and I thought, what's the silliest, dumbest 80s song that is the least fitting for me? Girls just want to have fun.
It makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that is a really difficult question to figure out. What is, like, the worst, best 80s song out there?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think this served
works.
Its purpose.
So, Johnny, thank you so much for being here. We've known each other for a long time.
Yes, at least 10 years.
At least a decade. Back when you were a part of the socially awkward sketch comedy troupe.
With my beautiful long locks of hair and a ponytail.
Yes, I still have some photos of you with that.
Can I get copies of them, please?
Yeah, I'll give you the negatives
because
that's how old they are, that there's negatives that exist. And you were doing stand-up back in those days, right?
Yes. First time I did stand-up was 99, so I was doing it all throughout college, and then we met.
Back in those days, there was really just, like, the open mic at
Safe House?
Yeah, the Safe House.
Pretty much. If you wanted to not go to Chicago, it was, the Safe House on Thursdays.
So after you did that for a couple of years, it was just mostly open mics, and then when did you start doing actual gigs?
In 2002 is when I graduated. It's weird because I would do my own shows while I was at Marquette.
Yeah.
And I had such a good following, and, like, you know, I was on the Studio 13 Refugees there.
Yeah, the improv troupe there.
Yeah. And so the whole campus knew me from that, and so I kind of, the audience was already on my side. So then when I got my first week hosting at the Comedy Cafe, I was just like, oh, this is going to be a cakewalk. And it was, you know, older, it wasn't college students, it was, you know, older people.
Actual human
beings. Actual people, you know, I say older, they were probably, what, 25?
Yeah, they probably did still have student loans to pay off, though.
Exactly.
So it's almost like the same
crowd. It wasn't the fake student person. Anyway, but they didn't know who I was, so it was like, it just didn't work, you know? I was doing these hour-long shows at Marquette and killing because they all loved me, and then I would be the MC, and I didn't know how to MC when I was starting. I just was like, oh, okay, I can do these announcements and then do my funny stuff and kill. And I actually got, I mean, not fired, but he said, after one of the shows on Friday, he's like, just do the announcements. You're not.
Wow.
It's just, you know, we have a reputation. Good comedy. You'll get there, but you're not there yet. And I was just like, oh, my gosh.
That's tough to hear, especially when you're just starting out.
Very deflating, yeah.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I mean now.
You
know,
showed
me,
him, though.
Well, now me and the booker, every time we exchange emails, we joke like, oh, man, remember when you sucked so bad that you couldn't even host? Like, yeah, I do. Still hurts.
So you've had kind of an amazing career, too. You're traveling all over and performing comedy full time, right?
It is a dream come true, you know? Like, this is, when I started, I was like, okay, that's all I want. I want to be able to make a living doing comedy. And I am able to do that.
So how much of your time is spent trying to develop new material and writing? How much of it is, you know, making the phone calls and trying to get booked at clubs and things? And, you know, how much is watching your kids?
Oh, that's right. I have kids. I need to focus on the writing because that's an easy thing to leave out. I wish I could say I write every day, and I need to, and I try to, but I don't. And so I'll try to focus on, you know, setting an hour aside to where I will write. And I'll do it either on the computer or just walking around or in a notebook. And I'll just try to, you know, force myself to write. But the booking and stuff, I mean, that's kind of what I need to survive, so I don't really set aside time because I know I'm going to do it. You know, when I wake up or when I go to bed, I'm always checking my email and sending out, you know, I have in my calendar, email this person this time.
Yeah.
Send your avails to these people. And so that's just, it always just gets taken care of because that's my livelihood. And I, you know, you're just not going to let yourself not work anymore. So it's just automatic. It's just something I don't worry about because I know it's automatic. So I always have to force myself to work on the writing,
yeah,
and testing stuff out.
Well, that's good though, because I mean, I know I've worked with some comics that are phenomenal, but you do have a tendency to hear a lot of the same jokes. It's mm-hmm. like, oh, well, this bit kills, so I'm just going to keep this in my act. And it's like, yeah, well, it's a good joke, but it was good 5 years ago.
Yeah.
So I'm always excited because you have some jokes that I consider some of my favorites, and I almost never hear them anymore, which is a good thing mm-hmm. because you have such new material, all this new material that's really fun and exciting. And yeah, you just have a really fun perspective on things.
Well, thanks. I need to be writing more. But like one thing that's fun for me, because I will, and like in a weekend, I'll try to mix up the shows just so that I don't get bored myself. And so one thing I'll do is I will, now I'm kind of bringing back like bits I haven't done in years just to see if I can get them stronger and add tags. Like it's stuff that I haven't, you know, put on a CD or done, you know, used yet. But that's kind of fun to do.
It'd be great. You talk about your kids and some of your jokes, and then you can bring back an old joke and be like, so I'm dating again, you know.
It's hard.
College, am I right, you guys?
Exactly.
Before you kind of took the step to do things full time, mm-hmm. you know, what was your comedy career like then? When, you know, you're doing gigs all over the country at that mm-hmm. point, but you still have like a day job.
And... Yeah, after I graduated, I was working at a home loan company and just trying to, I mean, I was just like waiting to be able to do comedy full time. That was the goal. So all my vacation time or, you know, any time off I had was used to do gigs on the road traveling. So I was like, there's agencies that I, you know, that I work with now, like Funny Business is one where they just have a lot of stuff around the Midwest, mm-hmm. like Wisconsin, Michigan area. And so I would try to get as much feature work from them as I could. And then I would use my time off to do the ones that were far away. But I mean, there were so many times where I would drive to a gig and then drive back through the night. Like I think Duluth, Minnesota, Rochester, Minnesota, where I would ask to leave at like 2:30 from work. Drive to the gig, do the shows, drive back through the night, and then go to work.
That's a lot. Yeah. I can kind of relate to that. I built a stage out in Madison. Mm-hmm. Like, I built a theater stage out there as a project, but I still had to work. And that was back in the Bucket Works days. So I would work at Bucket Works from 5 to 10 p.m., and I'd have to leave my house, I think, at 4 o'clock in the morning. And I'd drive to Madison because I had to beat the early rush hour. And then I could only work there until, what was it, like 2:30 before I had to like leave and come. No, maybe it was like 3 o'clock. Yeah. And I did that for a month every single day, 7 days a week. And it got to the point where, you're just like, what time is it? I don't know, because it's dark when I leave and it's dark when I get here. And I have a lot of parking tickets.
It's fun to reminisce on that stuff, but it's just like when you're doing it, it's like, oh, this is tough.
Yeah.
And I mean, I feel so lucky that I don't mind I love being in my car and just driving. You know, I'll go on these long drives and some people are just like, oh, I hate that. I don't know how you do it, but I couldn't do what I do if I didn't not mind that, you know, especially with podcasts and stuff.
Do you listen to a lot of podcasts, or are you just like, I have to hear Girls Just Want to Have Fun today?
Yeah, it's pretty much Girls Want to Have Fun on a loop, yeah.
What really was the difference between, as far as the work involved and as far as what you had to change about how you were doing comedy, what was the big thing that had to make the difference between doing it sort of part-time to really moving things forward and doing it full-time?
I don't know if I specifically had to change anything, because I was always working towards that. And there was actually a time where I tried to quit from my job, because I was very unhappy, and something had happened. I was just like, all right, I'm doing it. I had enough stuff lined up, and I tried to quit, and they came back at me with offering me part time, because this is a company that doesn't have part-time employees, you know, and they created a position. They went through corporate and they created this weird special position for me where I can keep my benefits and work part-time. And I was like, I just have to try to work 30 hours a week. You know, if you don't necessarily make it, that's fine. So I did that for, I don't know, a year and a half. But so I did that for a while and then started having cutbacks and laying people off. And I'm the only part-time employee, so obviously I'm the first to go, and it just happened to happen right when I had, you know, 2.5 months of solid work lined up. So I was like, all right, well, this is it.
It's either now or never.
Yeah. And so that is just, I got so lucky with how that worked out for me.
Wow, that's kind of amazing. Well, I want to play a clip. You have this really fun bit about being a substitute teacher.
Yes.
And I could really relate to this joke because that is totally what it was like when I was a kid versus, you know, kind of how it is now. So, we'll take a listen. And
sure.
Had to get another job to supplement my massive comedy income. And here's what I did. I got certified, became a substitute teacher. Yeah, that's a great job if you need flexibility and you hate respect. Okay. I told my buddy I was substitute teaching when I was doing it. He started laughing. He's like, no way. I can't even picture that. I can't picture you as a substitute teacher. Really? You can't picture it? You can't picture me standing next to a TV on a cart, pushing a video into a VCR, and then watching a movie with a bunch of drug dealers, really? That's too much for you to handle? Here's me on my average day substitute teaching. Okay, class, everybody please sit down. I am your substitute teacher, okay? My name is Mr. B, okay? We're not going through that again. Today for math class, we're gonna be watching a video that I brought. Let's see here. Clockwork Orange, so no talking. Now I was doing high school kids, or I was teaching high school kids. I was teaching high school kids because I thought they'd be easy. I grew up in Omaha, Nebraska. I went to a private school my whole life. You know, worst thing we would do at my high school when we had a sub is like switch seats without telling them, be like, ha, he just called me Kyle. Oh, what a prank. But that was it. Yeah, now picture me walking into a classroom as a sub, downtown Milwaukee Public School. As soon as I walk in there, these kids see they got a sub right away. It's, oh yeah, look at this. We got a sub. We got a sub. Suck my balls. Suck my balls. I am out of here. Yeah. And that was the girls. It's ridiculous. One day I got hit in the face with a strawberry Pop-Tart. Yeah, I bet you can't say that about your life. You know? Well, maybe this guy can. All right. We'll talk later. I'm trying to teach these kids, you know? Well, I'm pushing play. And I turn around, Pop-Tart right in the face. I was like, all right, who? You never forget the day you have to look at a bunch of children and say, who threw that Pop-Tart at my face? As they all just laugh and ignore you. So I was like, all right, who threw it? Who threw that Pop-Tart? They all just ignore me. So finally, I was like, all right, Jeremy, I know it's you. Get up here. Kid stands up. He goes, oh, what? You just know it's me because I'm black? Is that it? Must have been me because I'm black? And I was like, no. I know it was you because you're eating the other Pop-Tart, you moron.
I've probably heard that joke 20 times, and it still makes me laugh.
Well, thank you. That's very flattering.
That cracks me up. Well, you were just saying something while we were.
Oh, I was asking you where you got the clip from, and it's from the Trial by Laughter. It's like it's a competition contest that was the set that I actually took that got me first place.
Excellent.
So that's kind of cool. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because I was listening, I was like, wow, that's a really good crowd. The joke works, but this is really working. But I remember because that was a very energetic crowd.
That's good.
Yeah.
Yeah. That makes a huge difference.
The substitute teaching that my wife is a substitute or she's a teacher. And so to just supplement our income, this was years ago, but like during the day, I was just, you know, we didn't have kids. So I was like, well, I should be doing something while I'm here, something flexible. And so I substitute taught for a while, and I would go to these terrible schools, and then I would substitute teach at her school, and it was like that. It was a nightmare. That Pop-Tart story is true.
Wow.
I mean, like, everything is true. Like, this kid. They were all laughing. I was like, who threw the Pop-Tart in my face? And they all just laughed at me. And I saw a kid eating. I was like, I know it was you. And he's like, and he really said, oh, yeah, well, because I'm black. Are you kidding me?
Wow. Well, I'm glad that you at least stuck with the comedy side of things and that you're not, you know, it would be great if you were on David Letterman because you were like the greatest substitute teacher of all time. But I think it's better
they
that
just
it
don't
happened
have a segment for that.
Yeah, they just don't have the time. And but what? Let's talk about that gig. That was
sure.
It's phenomenal. I mean, I'm sure that's something that you kind of hope for your whole career, but you also don't necessarily expect it to happen.
Yeah, especially after he announces that he's leaving.
Yeah.
Then that's when I was like, oh, that's
never
too
gonna
bad.
What? What's the phone ringing
nice.
For?
Yeah, exactly.
So how did that gig come up? I mean, obviously, a number of years working really hard is most of it.
I mean, yeah, and I had you know some peers that had been on it before, and so I figured out who I need to reach out to and just sent a submission video. And was expecting to not hear anything back, like happens, you know,
every
nine
other time
times out of ten on every, you know,
one, yeah.
thing you submit to. And then he responded, said, "We think you'd be a good match for the show. I do want to work with you on getting the set polished." And that was in September of last year. And then we didn't hear anything. And I had heard that he kind of goes a while between emails because he's super busy. And so I would just send him an email maybe every month or a little more just saying, hey, just checking in, you know, and nothing. And I was kind of like, well, retirement's been announced. This guy's swamped.
I guess that's why I'm not getting the emails.
Yeah. And then I just happened to, I was January 5th. I just happened to be like, all right, well, send one more, you know, happy new year email. Just checking in. And then on my daughter's birthday, January 7th, he wrote back and said, yeah, sorry for the long pause. We had a big holiday thing and I just have been super swamped, but I want to talk to you about your set. Can you talk on the phone today at 2:30?
And the answer to that
and
question
I said,
is
I'm
always
kind of
yes.
Busy. So we talked and that phone conversation, I will never forget. He's just, you know, yeah, we love this. We love this, the set. We think it's really good. How you have it submitted, we think you'd be a good part of the show. We definitely want to have you on. And I'm thinking, okay. And he goes, let me ask you this. What are you available next week?
Wow. It was that fast.
And it's normally not. I mean, I'm guessing
right.
something happened where something opened up and I was there. You know, the timing just happened to work. But that's, I mean, it has happened quicker than that for other people. But it's also, you know, a lot of people, it's like, a year.
Yeah.
They're like, all right, yeah, we're going to get you in October of this year, whatever. But I was like, I'm available. And he was like, well, yeah, we already had we've had your sets been approved by the lawyers and by the show. So
I was
that's also kind of why I talk about my wife being pregnant versus because my son had been born at this point.
Right.
But when I did the bit and submitted it, that was all the situation. And so we talked about that, and I said that I do it differently in the clubs. And he's like, well, how do you want to change it? And that submission video was just so, like, there were a lot more tags and beats how I did it. And I was like, well, if it's okay, you know, if there are no fact checkers at the show, then, yeah, let's just do it as is.
You're going to be like, all right, stop your set right there. The band, you know, starts playing. They're like, look, buddy, I know your son exists.
Yeah, your wife is holding your son backstage right now. A liar.
What an amazing opportunity, though. So one of my favorite parts of the video, not just the jokes, but you have this great look on your face when you come out and the lights are on and you're like
utter nerves.
Yeah, just like you look like you're kind of half frozen inside and then you're like, nope, let's do this. And then you just, you know, the audience seemed to really love you and all that. But
I've said this before, like I don't think I've ever been more nervous than when I was just standing in the wing right before, and they're like, all right, we're coming back in 10 seconds. And I knew he was going to announce me. And I even had, I think he does it all the way, but I couldn't hear Dave talking while I was in the wing.
Sure.
So I was like, can you kind of give me like a push? When, tell me when to go. So the guy's like, yeah, I'll give you a little push. And I went out there. But that's the thing is, like, I was nervous and I was having all these terrifying thoughts, just like, oh, what if. Because there's certain parts of my set where I'm like, oh, I always stutter this when I'm going over to my head, or and this word I kind of tweaked this afternoon to change so it just sounds better, and just so it's not repeating a word. And I was like, well, what if that screws up? Because I've been in situations where it's like important, or it's a contest or something where I screw up, and so I knew what it felt like. But I was just like, all right, I am, and I knew I was super prepared. Like I'd never been more prepared. So I was like, I have this
down. I would hope so.
I need to just not think about the possibility of those things happening and just do it because I know I can. And so I went out there and just kind of, that's when I went out. I watch it now and I'm like, oh, I look like, oh, this is clearly my first time on national television. This giddy little idiot, you know, taking it all in. But and I did that on purpose. I slowed down and I looked, you know. But it's weird because the audience is lit up when you walk out there.
Right.
And then they stop playing your intro music, and all like you can see nothing. Everything goes black except for there's two monitors of me, which I didn't look at because that would just throw me off.
Like, who's that guy? Wait
like,
a minute.
Watching myself, that would have been too weird.
Yeah.
So I just, you know, I looked at the darkness, but it was. And then when I got done, I've never felt that much nervousness beforehand, and I've never felt that much relief
right
afterwards. It was so exhilarating.
That's incredible. I mean, I can certainly relate as a performer, and mm-hmm. I've been on television before. I know what it's like to like be sitting there in the dark and just looking at the studio, and you're like, why did they let some fool like me come down here?
I really tricked them good.
Yeah. So I'm curious, just from like a production standpoint, how was it a large audience? And I mean, I've seen it on television, but I know it looks a lot different when you're there. So how did delivering that set differ, other than the cameras, of course, and being on television, how did that differ from being in a club where the audience is, you know,
maybe, well, they're a lot closer in a club. And I've been told from comics and from my friend Eddie Brill that used to work there that the late show audiences, that's like, it's the best TV audience you could possibly be handed. And they all want to be there.
Great.
Yeah. They all want to be there. They're, you know, they're excited. They're at the Letterman show. They're seeing David Letterman in person. And, you know, here's a comedian. So it was great. It was, I wouldn't change anything. I mean, and I didn't treat it much different. I mean, from a club setting, like when I work at a club, I'm more loose because there's not as much at stake.
Right, you know? A little less pressure.
Yeah, less pressure, so I can do more. You know, and you don't want to ad lib. I mean, you know, people do, and you can, but it's
save
higher
that for
stakes.
That for your second time.
Yeah, exactly, or your ninth time or something.
Yeah,
and but I, you know, so I just stuck with my set, and it went well.
Just going to ask really quickly about that. If it's harder to stick to a certain script, knowing that there are certain things that you can't say or that you wouldn't want to say, does that feel like it holds you back? Or do you feel like as long as you have it rehearsed enough that you can relax into it?
Yeah. I think that having rehearsed it is key because, you do, like, especially with me, how I perform. I like to, like, I don't really put up a set list. I'll kind of do chunks when I go to clubs. I'm like, all right, I know I want to talk about the baby, health food, this. And so it is hard for me to be like, okay, I'm going to do the lettuce joke, the tomato joke. You know, it's hard for me to do that. I mean, with this, you had to. So, but yes, being super prepared made it to where I could relax. And they, you know, and I ran it so many times. Like, I found out on the 7th that I was going to be on it. And so I drove to Madison that night and got a tape because he wanted another tape of it just for timing purposes. Ran it that night, and then I did guest sets at the Comedy Cafe, I think both shows, that the following Friday, just to time it and try to get it down. That's the one thing I was the most nervous about, is because it was long. Like, it was coming in at about 5.5, and they want it to be 4.5. And he was like, we'll see if you can get it down, just trimming setups and stuff. And I was like, oh, that's gonna be a lot of work.
That's
gonna be tough. Yeah. And so that's what I was nervous about. And I get to New York, and I ran it. And they'll take the comic to a club in New York to run it the night before, which is nice. So I ran it at Gotham, and you know, and he goes with you, and then that was nice. That was like. That's probably when I felt like the most of a rock star.
When you walk in and he's like, he's with me.
He's doing Letterman tomorrow. The MC's like, oh, okay, I'll get you up next. And then I go up right after the person that's on stage when we walked in. And then I get done and you know, the booker's like, all right, let's go. And so we walk out and we're just talking about the set in the hall. And I was like, oh, my God, this is insane.
Did you guys get to wear the same suits and sunglasses or was it not that coordinated?
No. You got to be a little more sneaky than that.
Oh, okay.
Well, I think we should listen to that clip.
We've got it ready right here.
I remember when my wife was pregnant with Edie, she was terrified of the actual birth. And she handled it like a champ, and I knew that she would, because it is true what they say about women. You know, women have an extremely high tolerance for pain. It's amazing, which I think is weird, considering they have such a low tolerance for mild inconvenience. My wife, she can push a 9-pound baby through the inside of her body, but God forbid Hulu Plus has commercials. That's too much.
And we're back.
The audience was totally there with you, and it's really fun to hear, you know, to get an applause break like that. And I mean,
you just said it, but other people have said it too, that it seemed like right around that point is when I seemed like I was less nervous and kind of more relaxed from then on through the rest of the set. And an applause break will do that. That will give you the validation you need to be like, okay, I think I can do this.
Much better than, you know, if everybody's like, he's talking about women, get him! You know, boo!
Exactly. Yeah, you don't want that during your Letterman set.
Hulu Plus, we're Netflix people!
That was actually my favorite bit, too, just because I felt like there was a lot of layers to that. It felt very universal because I felt like that hypocrisy in human nature is something that everyone can relate to one way or another. It seemed like the audience seemed to get that in different waves, too, kind of like there was one level of recognition and then another, and that's how it seemed to me anyway. So
it's almost like all the guys were like, oh, my wife's laughing, so it's okay.
Well, that's how it is in the clubs, and I will point that out. Like, you know, there isn't a woman in here that can argue that, because it's not like it's not offensive and it's undeniably true,
right?
You know,
right.
but that is a joke that it went through a lot of different changes, like the tag of Hulu Plus.
Interesting.
Luckily.
Yeah,
like actually the joke where I said I say something about, you know, my wife's all into health food, and she, you know,
the bread
with the acorns and peanuts. And then I say, and I always thought it was funny, you know, I'll open up the fridge and see something like cage-free almond milk. And that got an applause break on the show. And up until, I think, the night before, I changed it because I had always said, and this doesn't make sense, like I don't get it myself, but I had always said free-range almond milk. Because it's the same joke, it's just different, you know, free-range almond milk.
Well, and I think it's funnier because then it's obviously about, like, chickens or cows.
Right,
you know,
right.
It's like a dairy joke, but if it's free-range, you just kind of think of, like, oh, almonds, like, in a field.
Yeah, and I didn't, you know, and I always said it because I was like, this has to, and I just kept pushing. And that was one spot where I was like, I don't want it to not hit on Letterman. And so I was like, I have to figure out. And I just changed it to cage free. and obviously it worked, you know.
That's the right choice. That's really funny. So since the show, have you felt like a lot of things have changed? I mean, you're obviously still doing a lot of work and, you know, writing jokes all the time. But were there any doors that seemed to kind of open?
Yeah, I mean,
easier.
There's definitely a few clubs that, you know, are really good clubs that I have just been very persistent about and couldn't get a response from. And now all of a sudden, we are interested in having you.
Well, that's understandable, though, because if they're at working on a certain level, and they're like, well, we need these kinds of credentials. That's the kind of club we're doing.
Yeah, and that's, you know, and that's what has happened. So it's just nice. I mean, It's weird because, like, you want to say, well, is that fair that that's how it works? Like, I'm not funnier now that I've been on Letterman, but it's just, well, someone who's very important said he was funny and put him on the show, so that's the validation. But, I mean, there's so many people that are way funnier than me that have never been on TV that are out there. You know what I mean?
Oh, sure.
But just once you're on TV, it's like, well, that's what we can sell.
And I think that's the thing. I've seen it on my end as a producer putting a show together. You know, we can have the exact same level of comics, but if one of them has a certain credit, you know, they've been on television, mm-hmm. that'll sell more tickets just because people feel more of a connection to, you know, I think if they've seen you on TV or that it validates it in the audience's mind. Oh, this guy is good because TV said so.
Yeah.
But I mean, I've seen it on other levels too, where there's really funny people, but I can't give somebody their first paid gig necessarily. I have to see them do something, mm-hmm. you know? But I'm okay if it's a video of them in front of a non-paying audience. There's nothing wrong with that. I just need to see it for myself. I can't necessarily take somebody's word for it.
Yeah.
So I think that, you know, from an other producer's standpoint, that could be it too. But, mm-hmm. but yeah, definitely deserved. And you know, it's really exciting for me to have known you this long and to see you putting the work in time mm-hmm. after time. And I think that's one thing people don't necessarily realize is it takes a lot of time. It is a lot of work. And, you know, you've obviously put the work in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I've never felt so much love as, you know, after when it happened and just my Facebook blowing up and Twitter. And then we had the local affiliate came to our house to film us watch it when it aired. So that was kind of fun. And then, you know, I was in the Waukesha paper, the journal. Mm-hmm. And so it was pretty.
And now WUWM.
Exactly.
Actually, I had a great coincidence for watching this because I don't have TV and normally I'd watch something like this online. Mm-hmm. But I happened to be visiting someone and I forgot that was the evening that this was going to be on. But then he happened to be watching and I'm like, oh, that's right. We're going to be interviewing this guy. And it was such a great feeling of like you feel like you're watching a sporting event. Like, that's our guy. He's from our city. Like, what did it feel like to kind of be...
Please don't bomb!
I mean, what did it feel like to be, like, representing Milwaukee and Wisconsin?
Oh, I was just so proud. That's what was awesome about the whole news coming out and all those articles is it's just, like, it's cool that I get to be, you know, one of the people that is representing the idea that, yes, funny people are in Milwaukee and this is a great place for comedy. And so just, you know, super proud. A lot of pressure, but... Yeah. It went. I'm happy with how it went.
So are we.
Yeah, me too.
Good.
Well, so what's next for you? You have any projects you're hoping that you can work on, or?
I don't. I'm trying to submit stuff for Comedy Central. That's kind of my next goal. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're just enjoying the come down period after the Letterman is just like, oh, this is. It's nice. So I'm just enjoying it.
Well, and it's probably very surreal, too. Like, you're in that moment, mm-hmm. and part of you is like, wow, this is really happening right now. But the other part of you is like, just focus on the jokes and, you know. And then I'm sure there was a period of time where you're like, wait, that really just happened. Like,
oh, yeah. I mean, that's what I said in one of the interviews of the thing is it's like I kept, like, kind of panicking like this. I've had very vivid dreams, but this is too vivid. Like, it's like this is not real. This can't be happening, and it's weird. Like, I have bad, low confidence or low self esteem, but I'm almost like losing respect for the show. I'm like, they had me on. Oh man, why was that a goal of mine? If they'd have a person like me,
they'll let just about anybody
on.
Geez. No wonder he's going
off. Yeah, exactly.
Well, Johnny, it's been fantastic having you on, and congrats again on
your
success.
Oh, thank you so much. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thank you. I really appreciate it. Well, I think a little more music might be in order.
Absolutely. Well, this is Milwaukee Comedy on WUWM at Night on WUWM Milwaukee Public Radio. Thanks again, Matt Kemple.
Thank you.
And girls just want to have fun.
Yes, they do. In the morning.